Okay. The next case is another construction contract case. And this one is interesting. It's about whether or not you can offset mechanic liens by damages. And the issue is basically that the owners of the property ended up paying the subs directly because the GC ended up having financial trouble. When the work was completed, the owners failed to pay a particular contractor because they felt that their work was subpar and that there was a lot of issues that needed to be corrected. So the subcontractor filed a mechanics lien. And the owners said, you know, they should be able to offset the mechanics lien against the damages that they were owed. And the subcontractor said, no, you're not actually, even though you were paying us directly, you're not actually a third-party beneficiary to my subcontract with the GC. So you have no rights to offset damages against me. And generally, they would be correct. Generally, an owner is not a third-party beneficiary under a contract. But in this particular case, the subcontract incorporated the general contract in its entirety, and it made multiple references to the general contract. And so because of that, the court found that the subcontract or the owner was actually a third-party beneficiary under the subcontract, and therefore they had a right to offset the damages. And they were entitled to damages because there's a common law doctrine of substantial completion in which a party is entitled to damages for errors or defects in construction upon substantial completion. And the court said they could find no support anywhere that damages for breach of the duty of substantial completion could not be offset against a mechanics lien. So the subcontractor was out of luck in this case. The next case I'm going to cover is another Supreme Court case. It's also another oil and gas case. And because it's not that important to those who are attending this session today, I'm going to generalize and talk about why I find the holding to be troublesome and not really get into the nitty and gritty of the oil gas issues. But I will say that the particular issue here is whether or not the Exhibit A, which described the property to be conveyed, was ambiguous. And everybody, the majority and the dissent in the case, found that the Exhibit A was ambiguous. And I've got an example of the Exhibit A here. And the reason why they found it ambiguous is because it listed the property that was to be assigned, and it listed both the well, a lease, and the section where the property was located. And so the question was, when it says the property is going to be described on an Exhibit A, were they conveying the well? Were they conveying the lease? Were they conveying all their interest in the section? What exactly were they conveying? Because it was not clear on Exhibit A. And I have seen this exact Exhibit A multiple times. I'm not sure why, but it's usually widely in oil and gas. And so everybody needs to be aware that it's important to describe precisely what is going to be conveyed. Now, in this particular case, the majority, despite the fact that they said Exhibit A was ambiguous, somehow interpreted the contract as a whole as not being ambiguous and found that Newhoff had conveyed all of his rights under the lease. The dissent, which I agree with, said that there's no possible interpretation of this agreement that can harmonize the whole document. Every interpretation, including the one that the majority came up with, requires you to ignore certain parts of the agreement or certain parts of the Exhibit A. And therefore, the dissent would have said that the contract was ambiguous and would have remanded it for a decision based on parole evidence. But that's not what happened. The Supreme Court found the case that they could interpret the agreement and found that it was not ambiguous. Next case I'm going to discuss, I'm going to skip forward to Trial v. Dragon, which is on page 35 of your materials. This is an estoppel by deed case. And in this case, Leo Trial and several of his siblings owned real property. Leo gifted his wife, Ruth, 1/2 of his 1/7 interest, so 1/14. Leo and his siblings then conveyed or purported to convey the entirety of their property to the dragons, but they had a reservation of interest for 15 years. And so the reservation actually would have terminated in 2008. In the intervening years, Leo passed away, Ruth passed away. And then Leo's sons claimed that they were entitled to 1/14. The dragons claimed that they were entitled to the entire portion. And the dragons attempted to say that, well, Leo's sons were Leo's privies. So even though Ruth did not sign the conveyance, Leo signed the conveyance, and Leo's sons were his direct relatives, and therefore they were bound by and estopped by the deed that Leo had signed. And the court said, no, that's not the case. Leo's sons inherited the property from the mother. The mother did not sign the conveyance, and the sons were not estopped from claiming the property. They were Leo's privies, but they were not Ruth's.